We're on, let's go back again. We're building these two psukim, pasuk dalet and pasuk hey, on page 552. We have two psukim, and we're now up to the malbum. Malbum pasuk 553. Mugging. We're describing here the red shield. The red shield. Why is it red? So far, sach hakol two perushim. Either it's red because it's drenched in blood, or it's red because they painted it red. Part of the psychological warfare. Now it says in the Malbim, page 553, Mogin, Atochoyz l'saper churbin harishon shel Ninve biprotos. Or right away, we're describing the churbin of the nation of Ashur. Techila botach hamelech sar dan apal. The Malbim is l'shitasa. All of the commentators are remember, always the learning, everything is l'shitasa. We're now going to describe the king that lived at the time of the Churban of Nineveh. Nineveh was destroyed at a later point in time. He's giving us here some historic background. The Botach HaMelech Sardanapal al Hamon Gibarav Shenitzchu Es HaMelchama Ad Shemogen Gibarehu, the shield of their war, of their warriors. Hoya me adam tsvo adam shu oy sheyish bichu dom rav velo yachmoilu. So he says over here that it's the same as the mitzudos, but it's different. Meaning that the enochanam, the word the mogin gibrei was me adam, blood. It will be red, drenched in blood. But in contrast to Rashi and the mitzudos that says that this was a fact. A statement of fact of exactly what happened, this was a promise. And maybe that's why we had a discussion yesterday, the word Giborehu is disturbing. Okay, I'm not familiar with the nuances of Diktuk, but the word Giborehu, I mean, if you're going to sit here, you can't do that, if you're going to sit over here. Giborehu, the Giborehu, it has to be Giborav. Giborav meaning his, it should really be his strong men. The word Gibor Rehu is a little bit unsettling.
It's a poetic
expression. So why here would he use this expression? But it seems that according to the Malbum, there is some justification because it's not the past tense. It's not a statement of fact. It's a promise. He's telling his people that do not worry. Do not be afraid of the kingdom of Ashur. Do not worry of Nebuchadnezzar. We will prevail. It's a promise. This is where the Malbim differs with Rashi and the Mitzudos. He's promising his people that they will prevail to the degree the Morgen Giborehu Hoyam Adam Tzvo Adam Shu Ois Sheyishvichu Dom Rav. They will spill a lot of blood. Lo Yachmalu, and will have no compassion upon their enemy. Anshe chayil shaloi he misuloim lovshu malbushim tzvuim bedam toila. They wore red color clothing that was dyed with the blood of a toila. L'simen retzach v'dam. So this over here means that he's choosing here to learn not like the mitzudois, but rather like the radak, that they would wear, and the Rashi as well, does not mean their clothing was stained and drenched in blood, but it means they wore red clothing in order, that was their uniform, and he says why it's red. It's a simen of retzach v'dam. Now, interesting, we learned until now that the psychological warfare was to humble the victim. But it seems that the Malbim was saying something very, very deep. It's in order to psych up the soldiers. When the soldiers see that their own garments are red, it makes an impression upon the soldier and gives him the courage, gives him the will to kill, to murder. They see red, they want more red, they want more blood. Like, you know, there's a lot of things that soldiers do in order to psych themselves up, to intensify their mindset so they can succeed. They march. What's the purpose of marching in formation? Why you see the parades, the soldiers, they march with precision. It has an incredible power on the mind when you march to have the will and the drive to succeed, to prevail and to conquer and to succeed in battle. So too, here is another technique, is they're wearing red clothing, not because of the enemy. They couldn't care less about the enemy. they're wearing red clothing in order that they should look at themselves and see the red, and that color will inspire them to murder, to kill, and have no rachmanis. We find that Nebuchadnezzar, he ate Aver min hachai. Now they say this disease now, I don't even know how to pronounce it. How do you pronounce it?
Converse.
Okay, this new virus that's going around now that is
the coronavirus.
Okay, the coronavirus is a pachat pachadim, what's going on, this virus, and where does it come from? It's not so clear where it comes from, but it seems it comes from Aver min hachai. It seems that it comes from people eating living animals. So what is the Torah? The Torah is one of the
Exotic animals, exotic animals. Snakes, bats, all kinds of crazy animals.
Alive.
I'm not sure if they were living or not.
Yeah, but
no,
animals they were.
We don't know. We don't know.
Okay, we don't know exactly. I don't know. We don't know.
We can't believe anything.
We don't know anything. We don't really know anything. It's true. China, you can never believe anything comes out of China. It's 100% true. But one of the I think probably the more popular thing that's mentioned in the media is that this disease came about from eating living exotic creatures. Living. Part of the disease is from a living organism, not from the dead. Okay, the others will tell you that, I don't know. Okay, that's not a raya. I'm not, the gematrias are not, the gematrias don't impress, are not, you can finagle a gematria like this, like that. I know, I heard that, so that, but that's, that, Aver min hachai. Aver min hachai, why would a person want to eat Aver min hachai? So this goes back to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, he ate Aver min hachai, rabbits and other types of things, and it Sitkiyahu accidentally walked in watching him eat Aver min hachai. And even in those days, it was considered to be barbaric to eat Aver min hachai. So what? One of the Zayimitz B'nei Noach. So Nebuchadnezzar, according to the Medrash, was ashamed, was embarrassed that he was caught red-handed on a hot mic. Okay, he was caught eating Aver min hachai, and he made Tzidkiyahu swear to him that he will not reveal to anyone that he did this, because this would not make him look good in the eyes of the world to eat a living animal. So the question is, if it was such a shameful thing to do, what, he didn't have enough meat, enough exotic chefs, he had to go eat living creatures? I mean, what's
there's no accounting for weird taste.
Mechus alechem, to eat a living creature? So the commentators explain that that Nebuchadnezzar was conquering the world. And when you conquer the world, you need to be very cruel. And indeed he was very cruel. But he felt, at some point in time, to have a small amount of rachmanis. Even having a small amount of rachmanis upon one of his victims can bring about his downfall. So in order to train himself to be an achzar, to be cruel, he went out of his way to eat living creatures, because there can be nothing more cruel in this world than to eat a human being, to eat a living creature. It's not for nothing that it's one of the Zion mitzvahs b'nei Noach, that adultery, avodah zarah, shvichas damim, it's equal to murder, to eat a living animal. I mean, why should it be equal to murder? The answer is, when you eat a living animal, it's a cruelty, an incredible act of cruelty, to pain and to torture the animal in such a way that you're deriving pleasure as you're torturing a living creature. And when a person does this enough times, he trains himself to have no sense of pity, mercy over any living creature.
You see depraved killers. As kids, they kill the cats.
They do these vicious things. So Nebuchadnezzar, he went to battle.
Terrorists are trained. I remember recruits had to bite the heads off snakes or something like that.
So in order that Nebuchadnezzar she wanted to say that when I go to battle, I don't want to subconsciously, make a decision because I have mercy. I'm a human being, and a human being is built into the DNA of a human being is to have mercy. That's the way it is. So Nebuchadnezzar was afraid, having mercy on the battlefield or any decision he made in his conquest of the world would destroy him. Okay, so therefore he had to eradicate, he had to uproot from his soul any vestige of mercy. And the way he did this was to eat living creatures, to eat Eiver min hachai. So here, that's an example of someone doing something to train them. That's the ultimate example of doing something to train yourself in order not to have rachmanis. According to the Malbim, what we have on a much smaller scale, they wore red garments. The purpose of wearing red garments was in order to put themselves in a frame of mind where they would have no rachmanis upon their victims.
It reminds the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
The Red Army.
Even the red, they did things, right? So it's also, that's it's a new idea for the person, for the soldier. For the soldier. The red is not, we've been learning until now that the red was a color in order to weaken and to humble the enemy, the victim. No, it's according to, he's very clear, the Malbim. Malbim learns that the red is for yourself, to be mechazik yourself, to be cruel, yeah.
Such that the soldiers would not worry about getting their uniforms dirty.
Okay, so we spoke about that. Someone mentioned that. Is that when you kill, like a doctor wears white, so that doctor wears white, so that if there's any stain on the garment, he should right away.
That's a germ issue.
A germ issue,
white,
right.
White is a germ issue, because even if you're working as a butcher, you've got to wear white coat. And for
right.
certain things, other people who are not at the butcher table or things like that wear blue.
Because,
so it
depends
on what you do.
Right, uniform.
Plant, you have to wear a certain color because.
Right, you have to see germs. Right, exactly, exactly. You want to see any germ. A doctor's uniform is.
It acts differently.
Right, the purpose. Wearing a nurse in the medical profession, the professionals wear white. Why? To see immediately any the germs, any disease. Any bodily secretion which can be poisonous, which can be dangerous, you want to right away know that there is a danger. So if you're wearing a white uniform and you see there's a stain, that means that stain is a disease. Get rid of it. Take off the uniform. Go put on another coat and put this in the washing machine. I once got into a lot of trouble. When my parents were sick, so there was a doctor, it was supposed to be a very, very big doctor, and he was treating a member of my family, and I really didn't like what he was doing, and I really felt that he was extremely arrogant. Okay, so you can be arrogant as long as you're a good doctor. You want to be arrogant, so it's fine. Just do your job and get the job done. But when I saw that he was making very sloppy decisions, very sloppy, according to all standards, and in addition, his arrogance was off the charts, so I lashed into him. I was very, very lashed into him. And one of the things I said to him, also, when he came to the hospital, when he came and made his rounds, he didn't wear a white coat. He didn't wear a white coat. He came in a suit. He came like I came in a suit. So one of the things that really, I got really angry. It was a very difficult time. I says, "What do you think you are? How come you don't even wear a?" I said, "Where's your white? Where's your uniform? What do you think you are over here? You just walk around over here like the CEO of the place. You're a doctor. Dress like a doctor. Behave yourself. Don't. You come here, you make these decisions." He didn't say anything to me. He totally ignored me because that was him. That was his gaiva. That's who he was. And it turned out he was totally wrong. The decisions that he made were clearly wrong. But whatever. So every professional has a special uniform. What's the purpose of the uniform? We have two perushim. Is the red color of the uniform here to instill fear in your enemy? Or is the red color of the uniform in order to be mechazek, the soldier himself? He should have no compassion. His resolve should be complete in his mission. And you recall, you're saying an idea which doesn't sit well with me, is that since in war, the color of blood, the color of war is red, blood, So you don't want to get you don't want to damage your uniform. You have to think about it so your uniform is red.
What I thought it meant along those lines, not my first when I scanned it initially, was that the soldier wouldn't react to his, you know, a lot of times when you have, not that you're concerned about your uniform getting dirty, but when you get splatted and you notice it, it's just a normal reaction to react to, you know, you got blood all over yourself.
So you don't see it.
But if you don't see it, so low cop mode, you shouldn't have mercy because you don't notice.
You don't even notice that you're injured. All right,
you
hear.
Just keep on doing what you're doing.
Maybe,
I mean, that's
okay. So you have to study ancient history and see why they were. But over here, we're getting.
Psychologically, you have all like all fast food restaurants are the tables are red because they want to make you to think to get out of there. It makes you react to eat fast and get out. In prisons, the colors are purple. That's to calm you down. You have in various places different colors are made.
I never heard that before.
Absolutely.
In prison, it's purple?
Yes, take a look.
It's palace, Malchus is purple. Yeah,
but that's what it does.
Interesting. And fast food restaurants are red?
The seats, the tables, they're red.
Why?
It makes you want to eat fast and get out. They want table turnover.
Wow.
Why are you sitting there? It's psychological.
Fascinating.
I never knew this. When you're packaging meat, never use brown.
Why not?
Because brown makes you think of other things. It makes the meat look good. You want to use like a blue or red, nice bright red, blue. You don't use green for meat, and you don't use brown for meat because it makes you think of, you know, it's green, it's brown, it's sort of
spoiled.
Like there are certain packaging for certain products that
fascinating
certain things. And these are studies done that makes it graze on the mind.
Okay.
In certain sports, one team prefers to wear the dark uniform because they feel it's more intimidating than the other team that wears the white uniform.
Very interesting.
Black and silver, they
What Rabbi Maisk says, I recently just saw the Kota team in Europe, a soccer team, they painted their locker room in that color, which makes them calm. And when they went to the field, the whole first half, they were like dead.
Sleepwalking through the game.
And in the same article I saw in Japan,
it works
was
that
a
way.
Train station was very popular with committing suicides.
Yeah.
So they changed the coloring of the lighting of the station, and the number of suicides almost diminished.
Wow.
I think they may have changed the law recently, but if you buy the insurance, a lot of times premiums are based on the color of the car you buy. In terms of if you buy a car that's red, you pay more than for a car with a different color because they're thinking of the psychology of the person who wants a red car. He's a fast driver. He's
aggressive.
Red.
He shouldn't see the blood of the people he hits.
And that's what it is. But I think they legislated against it now. But nevertheless, that's the fact. I mean, if you work as an actuary in the tables, that's what I can tell you that for a fact.
So. I think we should do a study and we should paint this room accordingly.
I'll give you one more. The army wears
fatigues.
Green.
To blend into nature.
That's right. Especially the Israeli army. Ki Adam hates us a day.
That's
to be like the trees. We are not.
Yeah, but the fatigues ignore that camouflage.
Your life.
Camouflage.
No. I'm talking about the
color.
The uniform.
When you're not in the battle.
Camouflage is different. Yeah. Uh-huh. But the uniform.
Uniform. What you're the uniform of as a soldier of a yeah.
It's dignified.
It's greed.
It shows the
green. So why green? Why green? Because
like
a tree. Interesting.
Earth color.
Not
very interesting. Unbelievable. Look at Apple. Okay, Apple. They were novel in their, all of their. It used to be when they first started, all their products were white. Everything was white. You know, all of their inventions. Now you can buy everything in different colors, but their flagship, of the color of what Steve Jobs would walk around with was a white product. That was a novel. No one had white in those days. Everything was black and dark. And you can immediately spot this is an Apple product because it's white. Okay, everyone copied them. Since then, you know, and they also they have to accommodate the people who don't want white.
Now they're talking about now Apple. I mean, iPhones. The company won't allow any bad guys in any movies to use an iPhone.
Yeah, I was going
to
say
a bad guy.
A bad guy will never be using an iPhone.
Wow. They can do that. They have power to do that.
Obviously,
The way they work is the other way around. What I've read is that the movies, they negotiate. You have a movie, and they show someone on a computer. So you'll see them on the computer, you'll see them in the back, Dell. Dell paid the movie company a fortune.
They said, obviously, they're not interested in product placement. That's what they call it, product placement. So they're not interested. They don't care.
No, they wouldn't. It's money, big money.
Yes, but they don't want
a bad guy to be using their product.
Well, they can get it because if you see the word Apple or the symbol for Apple, it's a registered symbol.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's why they make up fake names for the
marketing. Okay, this is very amazing. So here you're learning all about it. Over here you learn about the Kol Yudim. All the Mefarshim over here are coming very intensely to try to define the Magin Me'adam and the Anshei Chal Mituloim. What is the purpose of the Kol? Let's go further in the Malbim. The Malbim writes Anshei Be'esh. Okay, Be'esh Pelados. It's four lines down on page 555. Be'esh Pelados Horechev. Horechev Shechuchnu Ata Mechadosh LaMelchama. So he comes to explain to us this bizarre word we discussed yesterday. Why does it use the word prepared? What do you mean prepared? What's this doing here over here? It means brand new. That's his understanding. Paro, when he went out to war against Klal Yisrael, he took 600 chariots. Were these new chariots, or are these the old shmatas, the old chariots lying around in his storehouse? They were old chariots. It could be they've been around for 100 years. He took the old chariots. Now, are old better? Sometimes they are. Okay, he took out of Harechav Shechuch Nu'ata brand new. They manufactured brand new, state-of-the-art, fresh weapons to go out to war to obliterate the nation of Ashur. That to me is a very satisfying shot. When you go to war, do you use new weapons or do you use old weapons? There's a major market out there of the United States selling old weapons to other countries. United States, they make new weapons. So what do all the old tanks, all the old Humvees, all the old military vehicles? They hand it exactly. And there's a major market. In fact, Wallace, that book that you gave me, Wallace, that's what he did. That was his parnasa. His parnasa, the one who wrote that book, incredible. Nachum Seltzer, he wrote over the life story already, two volumes. He wrote the second volume also, Nachum Seltzer?
Yeah,
second one. He's now just wrote a new book on Esther Young Rice. Esther Young Rice, Nachum Seltzer, he wrote her biography. It's just about, it's about to come out soon.
Today's the year of her great-grandfather.
Of who, Esther Young Rice?
Usher Young Rice.
So he wrote, so what did he do for Parnassa? How did he make his living? He was a dealer in hand-me-down weapons. He took the weapons of the United States that were great condition, but the United States has new weapons, and he sold it to other countries. That was his parnasa, secondhand weapons.
Old technology.
Not really old. It's not brand new. You know, the car you could buy a new car today. The technology, you won't go today to a dealer, you buy a brand new car. Is the technology really anything that much better than what three, four years ago?
Yeah.
It depends. Yes or no?
Yes or no?
Okay, it depends. It depends on your old car was and on your new car. Some of the technology that you're buying today, we already existed 10 years ago, but you had to pay premium 10 years ago to get that. Now it's standard. So over here, it's very interesting that the Nebuchadnezzar, he went and he manufactured new weapons before he went out to battle against Nineveh. Do we have a precedent for this by any other milchama in Tanakh? Do we find that Paro manufactured new chariots before he went to chase Klal Yisrael? He didn't have time, right? But did he upgrade his arsenal? Not necessarily. They had what they had. They didn't spend money on this. This is something that is novel, it is new, and it's certainly something that I think we appreciate in our generation. Because in our generation, it's always the Cold War is always about who has the newest the newest, the shiniest, the more advanced, the newest technology. This is cutting edge. This pasuk here, according to the Malbim, b'yom hach, we know that you gotta have something new. Something new is a novel idea that we don't typically look at in previous battles.
In the Gaza war, the first casualties were because they used the old Nagmash. They gave the frontline troops an old armored vehicle.
That's why they
killed like 3-4 people.
Horrible. Old web, this is a very, very satisfying pshat. Shehuchnu ato mechodosh. One word here in his parish opens up a whole new world. La milchamoninu be'esh pilodois, tahainu, belapide esh shayu chadoshim, ki'ilu, they put them in belapide esh. So he learns over the belapide esh, he learns over here the word pilodois to mean like, it's a hafuch, like the Radak said from his father, pilod means lapid. They were the hainu belapide esh shayu chadoshim, ki'ilu, ki'ilu, la milchamoninu be'esh pilodois, they were put in fire. Belapide esh.
Shiny new
weapons. They were like just came out. It seems like they just came out of the assembly line. They came off the assembly line, and the assembly line he seems to be saying is the word lapidesh is a metaphor for the manufacturing factory where it was manufactured. Shayu chadoshim kiilu chuchnu ayoyim, like it was refreshed, refurbished. Is anything obvious? Refurbished. Okay, either refurbished or was brand new. The habiroshim hor olu hachanis hachanisois shayu me'atzei biroshim, the spears that were made from this type of wood, chumshuchu biral v'samamoves were. I'll take care of this. Okay? I got this. No, you can't sit here. You can't. This is my place. You can't. This is not. No,
everybody
no,
should know is mekom. Mekomo.
Okay, now let's not fight now. Mishnichnas Adar Marbim Besimcha. I understand there's a problem. I understand not now.
I am happy to sit here, to be with you.
But not there.
Okay, this is not.
Okay.
Hachaniso is Shahayu. I don't know what you need this for. I really don't know. Hachaniso is Shahayu Miyatze Bereshim Humshuchu Beralvis Hamavis. He's looking like the Mishnah of David. It says over here that it was laced with. No, this is not a good idea. Rav David, this is not a good idea. You can't do this.
Why not?
Eish umayim, don't mix. There's a recipe for this.
I'm going to move away. He has no other hair.
No.
I'm going to move away.
That person is mine.
You come here early, sit down. I told you I would do it. If you come here 9 o'clock, so sit down 9 o'clock. Why do you roam around and then come in whenever you want?
Enough, pull your chair
from somewhere. You don't have any there.
Enough.
Let him know. You should
enough,
insist on
enough. Enough. Next. Pasuk Kei. Sham Yisrael Luha Rechev. What does it mean, Bechutzois? Achorei Habatim Sham Yisrael Luha Rechev. He has a new taich. This we never saw before. We know what the Rechev is. Whole new, very fascinating interpretation. The Rechov is the front yard, right? We learn the Baruchov is in the streets. So what's the Chutzos? Miloshen Chutz, the backyard. There's the front yard and the backyard. I always saw the Chutzos were, you know, they're different. The Rechovos are the main streets, and the Chutzos, they're like the big yards. You go out to the park somewhere. No, he learns over here. Bechutz min achutz hu achoyre habotim. Sham yisraelu harechav v'yish dagu kimishugoim. And there, the chariots they would act with madness. Uvarchoy v'yishrechem mikoymos haruchavos lufnei habotim. The Malbim over here. This is the Malbim's specialty. Words, synonyms. He's the ultimate thesaurus. He tells us the difference. Words that are very similar. The chutzos is the backyard. The rechovos are the front yard. There yishdak shekun yiskabsu. They will gather together on the next page. Kumo yishem yiskabsim al hashuk rabim biyachad umarihem doime kalapitim. The appearance of the enemy looks like a lapid. The yerotzu kaburakim like lightning. The mihiwus gadol adkan siper eich. How they all prepared for war. Now let's clarify. according to there are a lot of things over here that are very different in the Malbim than everything we've learned until now. Number one, everything over here is a description of the nation of Asher preparing to go to war, unlike all of the other commentators. All of the other commentators are describing Asher being destroyed. If Asher is being destroyed, then these psukim are describing Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel, he is being, Nebuchadnezzar is a description of Nebuchadnezzar preparing to go to battle against the nation of Asher and to wipe them out. We also learned another interpretation, that these psukim are a description of the nation of Asher in their battle against Klal Yisrael. They're coming over here to inflict harm upon Klal Yisrael. There is such a pshat. But here the Malam is saying none of the above, and he's saying this is a battle between the nation of Asher and Nebuchadnezzar, but it's a description of Asher in their preparation to go to war, to protect themselves against the nation of Nebuchadnezzar, which ultimately we know will be a defeat. They will be defeated. But we're describing here their preparation. They realize it's a great danger that Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel, is gathering and is poised to attack the nation of Ashur. And Ashur, led by this person that whose name was Sardan Apal, he was a general this time in this historic event. He now prepared his people. He promised them, do not worry, we will be victorious. We will defeat the enemy. Our shields will be drenched in blood when the battle is over, the blood of our enemy. And let's prepare. Put on your beautiful red uniforms. Polish your weapons. Manufacture new weapons or refurbish your old weapons. And get ready for this battle. We're describing what the people of Ashur look like before they enter the battlefield to protect themselves and save themselves. But we have to keep in mind the end of this story will be that they indeed will be defeated. Again, it's not like everyone else. Everyone else says that this is a description of Nebuchadnezzar coming to destroy the nation of Asher. And there's one other point we want to clarify the story from yesterday is over here when it says Mareihen Kalapidim Kabarakim Yiroi Tseitsu. We had basically two Mahalchim. Either this describes the busha of the victim, the victim knowing that their days are numbered. When they see the enemy is so powerful, so mighty, they realize they don't stand a chance, and their faces turn red in shame, and they are totally lost. They realize they're about to be killed, and they run back and forth quickly like lightning. That's not the way the Malbim learns, not the way Rashi and the Mitzudos. All of them learn that this end of the Pasuk is a continuation of the beginning of the Pasuk, where it's not a description of the victim, but it is a description of the aggressor, a description of the one who is coming to wage battle. Okay, now let's take a look over here, Rabbi Avraham Ben. There are no Mamori Chazal on these Pasuk. I'm on the bottom page 555 Pasuk K. Marihen Kalapidim Kabarakim Yiroi Tseitsu. Shiva Matanus Tavos Osir HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on the very, very bottom, page 555, Likutei Shas, Shiva Matanus Osir HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Loseis LaTzadikim LaSolov of Elohein, seven gifts. A tzadik will receive the Elohim HaBa. What do you learn such a medrash like this in this, this Sifrei, in the Vadim, Elohein Koyach? Number one, a tzadik will have strength. We say, V'koyvei Hashem Yachalifu Koyach, Noi, beauty, Oysher, wealth, Chochma, wisdom. Why in this order? Shouldn't Chochma be first? Okay, Banim. Talk about Shidduchim. Ask a person what they want. What do they want in a Shidduch? All you have to listen to is what the order. A Shadchan, when a Shadchan interviews a candidate, these are the secrets of Shadchanim. When a professional Shadchan interviews a boy or a girl, what are you looking for? What kind of crazy question is that? What are you looking for? What are you looking for? At the end of the day, they'll all say exactly the same thing. So why are you asking the question? You want to hear the order that they put everything, that the person says. If they put money first, you know what this person's going through this person's mind. If they say beauty first, you know what's going through their mind. If they say they should be smart, you, right away, you listen to the Seder HaDavar. Life, secrets in life are all about order. The Coca-Cola, the classic example. How does the OU give a hechsher on Coca-Cola. It's a well-known fact that Coca-Cola has a secret formula that only a handful of people know. So how then can the OU give a hechsher on the secret formula when they're not privy to know exactly what the ingredients are? So I was once by a seminar in the OU, and someone asked this question, and if I remember correctly, the answer is, I think it was Rav Herschel Schachter, actually, if I'm not mistaken, maybe it was Rabbi Grossman. He actually was just nifter by Grossman. I think they said, what kind of question is that? Anyone can take a Coca-Cola to a laboratory, put it under a microscope, and we can right away determine every single ingredient that is in the Coca-Cola. So we don't even need them to tell us what's in Coca-Cola. We have a laboratory in this facility right here. I know someone that worked, Yankee, you know Yankee Lach? He wrote the book on Chulin. All the picture book, the gory pictures of all the chickens and the animals. He's the one who wrote that book. He used to work for many years at the OU as a scientist, I don't know what you call him, as a biochemist. And they have a laboratory there, and they take food and they put it under the microscope, and they can figure out backwards what exactly is in the ingredients in the food.
Not in the order it's mixed.
Oh, excellent. So what's the secret formula? We know what the ingredients are, but the secret is the order. If we give you all of the ingredients of Coca-Cola, and we give it to you, and we tell you now make, you're not gonna know what to do. You're not gonna know which order to put it, and how much, the exact measure, and how much time to let the chemicals mix before you add the next ingredient, and mainly the order. And even though you think you can reconstruct it, you can't. There's a very big difference in time, order, and volume and size of the ingredients.
Well, has anybody here been to the Coca-Cola factory?
No.
They show you, in other words, they give you, is one of the things that they do is they let you try to remake Coca-Cola. You have things that you add and then you taste it. Do you think it tastes like Coke? In other words, they're telling you what the ingredients are, but you have to know the exact
measure.
And I can tell you, if you read an ingredients in deli, you see ascorbic acid. If you put an ascorbic acid in the wrong order, it won't accept the chemicals to expand. The thing has to expand to allow you to put in the next ingredient. So you have to put in like the third or fourth ingredient, the ascorbic acid, or else you ruin the product and you won't have pickled product.
Seder is everything. Order is everything. In Shidduchim, you ask a person, what are you looking for? The order is everything. So you take that idea, and look at this. Look at this Maim Chazal. It's very striking. Over here it says, look at the Maisa Bereshis. Seder. Why on day one was, why are all the different things that were created, are they in this order? So it makes a lot of sense. Because if you pay close attention to Maisa Bereshis, each item of the next day is only built on the Yesodos, the foundation of the previous day. Adam is really a combination of all the 6 days. Adam could not, there's a Chazal, the Chazal said, why did Hashem make Adam last? So the Suda is prepared, you just walk into the Suda. That Chazal leads us to believe there was a possibility where Hashem could have made Adam on day one and put him in a freezer, freeze-dried him until the world is ready for him. Okay, but a lot of the Mepharshim don't learn like that. They say it's impossible. Adam, Harishon, man could not possibly have been created until there was a sun, a moon, there were grasshoppers, and there were kangaroos, and birds, and cockroaches. Because each one of these creatures contributed something unique that would be necessary for man to be created. Say there is everything. And here, it's fascinating that it says in this Maamar Chazal, that Hashem is going to give every tzaddik 7 gifts. Okay, so everyone wants gifts. Everyone wants to be the perfect man. But yet, look at the Seder. The Seder speaks for something. Koyach, Noi, Oysher, Chochma, Bonim, Oirech Yomim, Venachas Ruach. If you would ask anyone in this room to take these 7 things and put them in order, I guarantee you no one here would put these things in this order. I guarantee you. When you're thinking objectively about what is important in life, no negias. Okay, one thing when it's yourself, when it comes to yourself, When it comes to yourself, everyone has certain negias. I asked something very fascinating yesterday. Someone asked me, I can come over and look. He's buying the Sefer Torah, and he wants me to come and look at samples. So once upon a time, I spent a lot of time on this, on learning Safros. So I told him, I don't know anything, but he says, just come. I need someone to talk to, a sounding board. And I told him, go talk to this guy and this guy and this guy. And he told me, and in the process of the conversation, he listened to me, he took pictures, and he sent it. Okay, so I really just went out of curiosity, not because my opinion is going to make a difference anyway. And I look at it. He shows me there, and I said to him, I'll tell you how I feel. This sample technically is better. It's more precise. Right. It's more defined. There are certain features I see. But yet, this other sample, it's not as refined, but just it speaks to me. I like it better. There's more of a yoifi, has more of a beauty to it, which resonates. Just somehow I connect to it better. So he said to me, everyone says the same thing. That this one is technically better, but I was machaving to what everyone else told him, but this one is more. So I said to him, well, I told him to ask certain people for that. I said, I'm predicting to you that this one is going to tell you this one, and this one will tell you this one. And I was right. Why? Because my past experience has shown me that this person is an ish halacha. He's an ish halacha. He's not an, he wouldn't never get a job as being an interior decorator. This guy, no way. You put him into a room and to design a room, furniture, furnishings, paint, wallpaper, window treatment. He wouldn't last a day. But Shulchan Aruch, he knows very well. So he looks at the Ksav. What does it say in Shulchan Aruch? You need this tag and this tag and this and this and this. He goes with that. And this other fellow I know, he knows the halacha inside out, but he has a certain flair, a certain elegance. A certain style to him, and the way he dresses and everything about the person. Okay, he appreciates the finer things in life. So by him, is it halachically kosher? Yes, it is. It's halach. Is it as perfect? It's a small nuance. Yoifi means something to him, and he'll tell you, take this one. And it's true, it's a matter of style. It's like that in life. There are things in life that you buy an esrog. So someone will show you an esrog. This esrog, oh wow, it's a really nice esrog. There's a small, teeny imperfection. It's so teeny, it's halachically, it's 100% kosher. This other esrog, kula yofer ayosi umum ein bach. There's no imperfection. But it's boring. It's boring. So what do I buy? My nature is to buy the nicer esrog, even though it has an imperfection. That's just my nature. I can't help myself. It's an impulse. And other people I know, I go to someone, he always shows me his esrog every year, and I look at the esrog. He pays like $300 for the esrog. Mm-hmm. I look at the esrog, and it's always, every year, the same thing. This is such a boring esrog. And I look at it. It is so perfect, you're right, but it's boring, it's small, there's no chain. That's him, that's the personality. Other people like a little schmaltz. Are you willing to be moichel? We're not talking about halachic issues. If it's halachic issues, there's nothing to talk about. You can't, it's kosher. It's just dealing from like 99 to 100%. So does halach allow you to do that? I'm assuming yes. I'm assuming Allah allows you to. So that's over here. I find this, the Chazal, extremely fascinating, because over here, anyone that, when it comes to your personal preference, you have a netia, you're no gea bedavar. But when you want to put it down on paper, what are the priorities in life? I don't think people would put it in this order. Probably the first thing you would put down is banim. Then you would put down chochma. Or maybe chochma. I would imagine banim. Then you have chochma. Then you would have nachas ruach. Then orech yamim. And then a koyach. I mean, where would you put koyach? Somewhere in the middle over there. When it comes to noy and oisher, I would assume when you look at these other words, I would assume that noy and oyesher go at the very end. I mean, you need money to live. It means kemach in Torah. And if you have money, you know, you can do a lot of things. It opens up your mind to have money. But we see there are many people out there in the world that don't have money, very poor, and they're very happy and they're very successful. And there are a lot of ugly people out there. Most of the world is ugly. Okay? Most of the world is not glamorous. Not everyone is a Hollywood actor, actress. Okay? And they're very happy people. They're very successful people. They have accomplished very great things. So it's very shocking to me, the order. And it must then mean to me that when the only answer to that question is that when it says over here, we're noy and oysher, we cannot take it literally. Chazal say, Ezehu osher hasoymeach bechelkoi. It means simcha. Simcha sachayim. Simcha sachayim is not the same as nachas ruach. When it says noy, beauty, what does it mean, beauty? Midos. Okay, Chazal, when they talk about beauty, they talk about midos toivos. You have to assume that when it's these mamori Chazal are not discussing to be taken literally. Otherwise, it's really baffling how it can say it in this order. It's true. If it was just me, a shallow person, and you lay out certain things, I may very well make the wrong decision and choose things that are not important because, you know, that's who I am. I'm not a tzaddik. I'm not a, you know, you are what you are. But when you look at these things objectively, it's not again me, you know, you're looking over here, Yemos HaMashiach, objectively, who would do this? Who would put these seven items in this list? Impossible. No one here, I cannot imagine anyone here would do this in this list, and therefore it forces us to believe that this put in this, that the translation of these words is not a literal translation. On Rosh Chodesh we say, Chayim shel oysher v'chavad. I once went to a Levaya and they said that about a woman, she was nifter, they said about her that her whole life, she, when it came Birchas Rosh Chodesh, she did not say covered. Mm-hmm. Oysher v'chavayt, she did not say the word kavayt. She said oysher, but she did not say the word kavayt. She could not bring herself when she said birchas. A woman, it's a very big thing. I don't know why it's a big thing. It's like you know, it's kodesh kodashim. A woman that only comes to shul once a year, she'll come for a rosh kodesh benching. For some reason, it's a big thing. By some, it's even bigger than yiskar. Maybe yiskar is the biggest. Even though yiskar, I don't know what's the big deal. Yiskar, you know, you can do yiskar every day, and you can say yiskar b'yichidus. You don't have to say yiskar b'rabim. You can say b'yichidus. Even when you say yiskar, you're saying it midin at tzibur? I don't say b'tzibur. When you say yiskar, you're saying it as yochid. I'm not so sure there's a din. There's no din of a rabbim, a davisha b'kedusha. You can say yiskar at home. For some reason, yiskar is kodesh kodashim to come to shul. After yiskar, what's next on the list is birchas rosh chodesh. Birchas rosh chodesh, Shabbos mevarchim. And what do you say there? Chayim shel oysher v'chavod. So the hesped was, this woman her whole life could not get the word covered out of her mouth. How could she ask Hashem, you should give me covered? And therefore she didn't say it. So at the time, I thought, wow. And as I got older, I realized, first of all, that's not your decision to make. If Chazal gave you this nusach, and it's the minhag yishol to say kavod, be mispal for kavod. Even though that's the only thing you don't understand. That's the only thing. You can read for me even one mizmar, you understand. That's the only thing. So first of all, it's not your decision. Number two, I'm not chashom, somebody criticizes this woman. Chashom is a holy woman. Where do I come to her? But I'm just talking in general. It's not your decision to make. Number two, a person needs kavod. Kavod does not necessarily mean you're on television and you have 5 million people, you have 5 million fans, okay? Who has the most fans on Facebook? Is there a person, there must be some statistics, who has the most fans on Facebook? Who has the most followers on Twitter? There must be a person out there in the world, right? That's not what it means. It means just dignity. Self-respect. Basic, what?
Self-respect.
No, the Rav Hudner. Rav Hudner said, I told you the joke. It's not really a joke. It's very, very true. A person can live without a home. You can be a homeless. You can live on the train. A person for how long? Whatever, until the elements catch up with you. You can live without clothing. You can walk around the street naked. How long will you live? you live a long life. I mean, eventually you'll freeze to death, but you can live without clothing for a long period of time. How long can you live without solid food? With food, with solids? A long time, a couple of weeks, right? A couple of weeks, a couple of months. How long can you live without fluids? No fluids. How long? A couple of days, a week, I don't know, whatever it is. How long can you live without air? About 4 minutes, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, the most, without air. Rahman al-Utslan, they resuscitate a person, the clock is ticking. How long can you live without kovod? Not even 1 second. Not even 1 second. Now, it sounds like a joke, and Rav Hudner was known for, you know, he was very into kovod, kovod ha-Torah, kovod, all different types of kovod, but it's not a joke, it's really true. It's really true. Every person needs self-worth. So chayim shall oyshev chavod. So first of all, it's not your decision to make not to say anything in the Nusach HaTfilah. You don't know what it means. And also, what does it really mean? Chavod means, you know, some doesn't mean fans on Facebook. This month I should get another 5,000 fans on Facebook. Is that what it means? Come on. It means self-worth. And then the real pshat, what does it mean? I should have an opportunity this month to be mechabed other people. Ezehu mechubad ha-mechabed es habuyos. I should have a month of kovod. I should have the opportunity this month to be mechabed somebody, to make someone feel good. Isn't that a beautiful thing to pray for? Not your kovod. Ezehu mechubad ha-mechabed es habuyos. I want a chayim shel oisha. I want money. I want rich. I want to have $1 billion. What are you going to do with all the money? You going to take it with you? Did you ever see Brinks truck following a hearse? Never saw a Brinks truck, a procession of 20 Brinks trucks going on the highway following a hearse. You ever see that? Never saw that. I have to Photoshop that. We have to Photoshop that. That would be something good to do. You never saw it. Why not? Because you don't take. So what do you want the money for? Ezehu oshir hasoimeach b'chelko. I should not need to go to the shrink. I should not need any medication. I should be happy. It's a very tall order to ask Hashem chayim shel oisher, the real meaning of oisher, the real meaning of kavod. Likewise, when you read this chazal and it says here seven things. And now you're going into a very dangerous world when you ask a person, tell me, what are you looking for in a shidduch? And they're all going to give you, at the end of the day, the same exact thing as the next guy online. And what the shadchan is listening to is the order of the priorities in your life. No one on paper, when you take away the Yetzirah, would list these seven items in this order. No one in this room, I guarantee you. I put everyone here. If you talk abstractly, what's important in life, without putting aside your personal negius, impossible for any Orthodox Jew who has values like you here in this room to put this in this order. And yet Chazal put it in this order is shocking, shocking. Obviously, it has to mean that their translation of the word Oyesher by Chazal does not mean money, and Noi does not mean that you're on Hollywood. It means something very, very different. Now, go further. No, we have to go. Let's go further. Next, now minoy. Noy minayin. How do we know noy minayin? It says marayin kilapitim kibrokim yiroitzeitzu. Now it's an incredible chiddush with this chazal. Chazal always they do this. They have this incredible knack of taking things out of context. Okay, he takes something out of context and interpret it. Put on a positive spin, unlike the media. I once saw years ago on television on a clip at night on the late night news where they talking about politicians how the media has the ability to take a sentence and totally take it out of context, and it was an incredible clip. If I wish I had, I could send you. I don't know where to find this. They told the person who was interviewing. The person that we're talking to was a professional who trains politicians. Politicians have professionals who train them how to answer difficult questions. How to
actually
avoid answering questions. How to say a lot. How to say a lot and say nothing.
Manipulation.
How to stay creative. I remember my father always say about a certain very, very eloquent, very famous person. My father, he really is a koyach of dibur in writing, but he doesn't always have time, you know, he's very busy too. So he would write articles, maybe in a column, and it was always very eloquent, but there was absolutely no substance. Mm-hmm. I would say, it's eloquent baloney. Eloquent baloney. He has nothing to say this week. So he just you know, the word just come out, his pen just flows. Mm-hmm. But what did he say? He said absolutely nothing. But did it very eloquent. It was very eloquent how he presented these words. So that's what they are professionals who train politicians to do just that. And he did an experiment. This was amazing. It made such a rosh hashanah that I remember it so many years later. He did an experiment on the person who was interviewing him, this professional who worked for this television station, whether it was Channel 7, Channel 5, Channel 4, whatever it was. And okay, I'm going to ask you some questions now. I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to ask you some questions now. And he asked him some questions. Be careful what you say. Be very, very careful. And he asked him some questions. And, you know, he was a reporter, and he answered all the questions. He then, they did this in a 10-minute segment, so they did the whole thing very quickly. He then took what he said, and he basically made a commercial. Make believe this guy was running for president. Make believe this fellow, the reporter, who he interviewed him, he asked him 5 questions, and he gave 5 answers. He gave like each answer, whatever. He spoke for 2 minutes, whatever, to answer the question, each of the 5 questions. And you watched him. Then he made a video. Let's make believe you, the reporter, are now running for president. And these are the big issues in the campaign. I'm now going to make a negative advertisement against my competitor. You're my competitor. What does he say about health reform? Don't, you know, this judge. And then he took a couple of words that this fellow said, and he played it. He made a mock video, a mock commercial, and he basically painted his opponent as the epitome of evil. Why? Because he took words totally out of context, and this exactly he said it. What do you mean? This is not photoshopping. This is what he said. You said this. I went, and he put it in the right place, and he audio shop. Good term. That's your term.
Audio shop.
So he did this, and it was brilliant. And it goes to show, like, you can basically take anything a person says if you have the skill, and distort it. So he says, well, that's what we do. We train. There are certain things that you know certain keywords, how to train politicians to be careful not to fall into this trap. That's what this fellow does, his parnasta. Obviously, he's very successful. He knows how to train a lot of politicians. Use him. So Chazal were the best at this. Chazal were a lot better than this fellow was, but they did it. They did it obviously with the Mesorah, and that's the beauty of Nach, where it allows itself on purpose to be done for all different types of purposes. And here is one such thing like that. Here, Umarayen Kalapi Dim Kabrokim Yorit Seitzu. We just learned this pasuk according to every single opinion here as a negative statement. This is nasty. It's describing over here the wickedness of the enemy Nebuchadnezzar or the kingdom of Ashur or the shame, Radak, the shame that the victims are going to feel, they're going to sense when they recognize that in a few moments they're going to be obliterated. Along comes Chazal, none of the above. We're going to take this totally out of context to describe, obviously there's a Mesorah, you can't do this on your own, they have a tradition to do this, they have a moon of a Mesorah to do this, and we're going to, that Le'osilavoi, Tzadikim, are going to have beauty. Noi. How do you know that? What's the source? This pasuk in Nachum, middle of nowhere, describing the Churban of Asher, or the description of them as a victim, and we say over here, Marehen Kalapidim, the appearance of a tzaddik will be burning like a torch. Kibarakim Yiraitseitsu, they will run like lightning. Ma habarek hazeh shurotz misoyfa oylem v'yat soyfoy. Lightning, it goes from one end of the world to the other. That itself is a very fascinating concept. When you see a bolt of lightning, do you look at the bolt of lightning going from one end of the world to another? Not really, right? Because we know too much about the universe, the galaxy, the Milky Way. But it says here that the real world is what you see. When you see a bolt of lightning, it's going, it's considered rots. Misoif ha'oilam v'yat soifai. L'shokala, in a split second. V'choizer l'shokala, and it comes back. What does it mean, v'choizer l'shokala? I'm not sure what that means, what he means by that.
Repeats itself.
Repeats itself, multiple bolts of lightning. Kach Yisrael, osid. Kol echad ve'echad la'alois li'ushalayim la'asois karbono l'shokala v'choyze l'shokala skadi beam me up. You go right, and it's what it says, that you'll personally be somewhere in America, and like in speed of lightning, the speed of light, you will be in Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, bringing your karbon. And then you'll go back, v'choyze, I think v'choyze means it goes away. I mean, the soivel of the choizel l'shokala means it returns. What does that mean exactly? Lightning returns? He seems to be saying that we don't understand what lightning is all about. When we look at a bolt of lightning, like a flame, we look at a bolt of lightning, we look at it, it goes from here, and it comes down and it ends. It seems that the Chazal did not look at it like that. Chazal, when they looked at a bolt of lightning, they looked at it that a bolt comes down, and when it disappears, it's not disappearing, it's going back up. And there's truth to that. There is scientific proof to that.
Going up, then
okay, well, you have a bolt of lightning. What do you look with light? It comes down and it stops, right? Just a current. A current is sent down, and as it comes down, when it's in the middle, what's over here is no longer, does not exist. And the further down it goes, it's no longer higher up. Is that the way lightning works? Or when the bolt of lightning comes down, when it's on the bottom, that bolt is still fully, fully connected above. And when the bolt ends, it doesn't disappear from top down. It disappears, it just returns where it came from. A flame, you see this by a flame, the flame flickers. You see this. The flame goes up and the flame goes down. Okay, so I don't know if this is something scientific that we do understand or do not understand, or this is maybe what appears to the eye. It's nira le'inayim. A bolt of lightning rapidly comes down, and then rapidly, when it disappears, the way it is disappearing is, it's returning back to its source. This is a dogma for beauty. Now, what does it do with beauty? It's also, what does it do with beauty? Umarehen kalapidim, that we understand. Even that, why is that called beauty? A person who looks like a torch, in my eyes, is scary, not a beautiful person. Okay, person looks like a torch. What does that mean, beauty? That's called beauty? Like I told you, we don't even know what these words mean. The beauty is he looks like a torch, and he's like lightning in regard to the fact that he's in America, and in a split second he's in Yerushalayim, and when he's finished doing what he needs to in Yerushalayim, they beam him, he's back where he came from, returns back to America. Probably you learned this Chazal 200 years ago, you would laugh. What does this mean exactly? Today, we don't laugh. We still don't know what this means, but we don't laugh because who would ever imagine I can go on my telephone, press a button in 1 second, and I can be talking to someone on the other end of the world in a matter of just pressing a button. You tell this someone 100 years ago, they'll laugh at you. You can go, I could sit over here in this room and press a button and be talking to someone on the other end of the world. It's a bigger chiddush. I can press a button and be talking to someone in the back of the room. Like some of the rebbeim in yeshiva, the only way they can communicate with the guys in the back of the room, they have to text them in order to get their attention. So, who would believe this? Okay, the Concorde. Okay, they're bringing it back now, the Concorde. They bring back a newer version of the Concorde. But You can travel from America to Eretz Yisrael to Concord in how many hours? 4 or 5 hours? Okay, now it takes, what it takes now? 12 hours, 11 hours?
It takes 3 to London, so it was half the trip.
So you can get to Eretz Yisrael in 5 hours?
Yeah,
not real, right? Not real. So who says that technology will not advance where you could, like it says literally, we don't laugh at this anymore. Okay, we still have no clue what this means. We have no clue.
You know, I thought it just occurred to me that maybe these seven matanas that he's talking about is in the ascending order rather than descending order.
Interesting idea. Okay.
You know, because Barak is here, it's fleeting. And beauty
is fleeting.
All there obviously without Mukhtasen.
Koyach, see, the difficulty with koyach, that is, it's koyach. It's not lasting. Noi is not lasting. Oisha.
Yaakov said, my young, Yaakov Avinu, what did he say? What did he give you? My life was full of tragedies and full of sorrow. So if you have all coming and nothing rough, that's the highest.
Lasting. You want to say that the order, okay, he's saying very deep. Saying that over here that the order is not, we are brainwashed that the first thing is the most choshev. You're suggesting that no, we're going in ascending order. Now, the reason why that even dawned on me is because I would think koyach, you need strength to live. How could that be? But you're saying it's not a matter. You're saying there's another element over here is what is lasting versus what is
a powerful man.
Koyach. Okay, a very beautiful idea. Obviously, this Maimaka obviously needs a lot of work to understand what this means. He's saying, you bring out a very good point that we're going in ascending order and also adding the element of things that are lasting versus things that are ephemeral. Noi, beauty, doesn't last forever. Things like that. Money certainly doesn't last forever. It's like Gilgal HaChoy Zabiyoylam. Koyach. Okay, we have to understand what this means. The Koyve Hashem, the Koyve Hashem, Yachalifu Koyach. You see a need for renewal. Renewal, koyach, does not last. Okay, let's go further. Point over here is, we are out of time, so point over here is, this is what he says over here, noy. Okay, so I don't have a hezber. Marein kalapidim, but kabarokim yoritzeitzu is the translation, as we take out of context, it means beauty. What is beauty? What is yoifi? Avraham said to Sarah Imenu, ato yodate ki isha yifas mare'at. And now it's time to worry about your beauty. It says, but all of the imahos that they were drop dead gorgeous. Right? Doesn't it say that? It says, yifas toyar, yifas mare, different expressions for their beauty. By sorrow, yifas marat. See, by Avraham, it's very interesting. By Avraham, it said the beauty described of sorrow was given by Avraham. It doesn't say that the Ribbonish Shalom said about her that she was beautiful. It says that Avraham said about her that she is beautiful. Okay, by the next one, Rivka, it says, V'isha, it says there, it's a statement of fact. Who said this fact? Who's the one that the Torah says this?
Right.
And Rachel as well. Rachel, it says, the Rachel Hoyesa Yifas Toyar Yifas Mare in the past tense. The Ribbono Nishal made is the past tense. It means now not. It was. It goes away. What does that mean? And what is it? Was that Leah? The Ene Leah Rakois. So what does it mean? Rashi says it means that her eyes were tender. She cried a lot. What does the Targum say? It says their eyes were beautiful. And it says in the present tense. And what does it say about Rivka? It says Rivka, it says something different about Rivka. It doesn't say, it says Rivka, yifas toyar. It says the word toyar. A different expression for Rivka, it has a different expression for her beauty, Rivka's beauty. So, obviously, beauty, now it doesn't say the word noi. Noi is a different word than yoifi. There's yofe. Parsha zo yofe nidreshes, beseder oilam, koirach. Rashi words the word yofe. Here it says noi. On sukkah, what word do we use? Noi sukkah. And what is noi sukkah? You're supposed to hang up in the sukkah the shivas haminim. That's called beauty? There's no interior decorator today that will hang up anywhere in any of a project pomegranates and wheat and barley. I guarantee you, go on all the sophisticated websites of interior design, you will not find anyone hanging up in the ceiling pomegranates, wheat, barley, and dates, and figs, and olives. No way. So how could Chazal say that's called noi sukkah? What does it mean? The word noi has a very different meaning. and all that's part of the mystery over here of, it says, a tzaddik doesn't get noy, and we quote this pasuk, and this pasuk is even more bizarre, because in our eyes, being red like a torch doesn't seem to be beautiful, it seems to mean, pretty to be scary to me, to be red like a torch, have a good complexion.
A
gingy.
It says, a gingy?
Vanar by Rivka.
Yeah.
Toivas mare ma'od. Toivas mare. And by Rochel it says, yifei toyar and yifei mare. Yifei toyar, yifei mare. Toyar, form. Form.
Yosef was
yifei. Is it describing their face? Describing their body? What is it describing exactly? Who knows? Right? Who knows what it's describing? If we met them, if we actually got a picture, can you imagine if we had a real picture of Avra, of the Imos? What would happen if we had a picture?
They wouldn't print it.
They would burn it.
Burn it? Okay, so therefore, what does this, the Yoifi is, Pasha says, red like a torch, and then it goes on, to say, Maha, Baruch Hazeh, the Baruch, beauty, Noi, seems to be connected to Zerizus. Is that what he's suggesting? Zerizus, swiftly, today you're here, and you go to the Beis HaMikdash, you're there in 1 second, and you come back, Zerizus. So is the Zerizus technology? Is that your beauty? Or is that a matter of what society, how technology? Technology has made it possible to do these things. That's not your beauty. So what does it mean exactly? I have no idea. We'll have to leave this for tomorrow. Okay, we'll take a short break.